From Carol McKinney Public Media in Oviedo, Florida.
When Squadron VF-32 was supporting the Marines on the ground in Korea at the 38th parallel, Jesse's plane began to lose fuel. A stray bullet hit his plane.
The pilot of that plane was Jesse Leroy Brown, and his fate is told in a new exhibit at the Sanford Museum, entitled A Pilot Lights the Way. The Korean War is often overlooked, and its heroes rarely remembered. But this exhibit tells the story of two Navy flyers, one black and one white, who were brothers in the cockpit during that war. I'm Desta Horner for CMF Public Media. Jesse Leroy Brown, the first black naval fighter pilot, is the subject of the Sanford Museum exhibit. Memorabilia and pictures are on display to catalog his life, from his struggle to achieve his dream of flying in an era of institutional racism, to his death on his 20th combat mission in Korea. And Brown's inspiration is matched by the heroism of Thomas Hutner, his wingman on that final sortie in Korea. The exhibit's curator is Valeda Parker Fluellen. She is a poet and writer from Sanford. The exhibit also includes drawings by Carl Raphael Purdy, which captures Ensign Brown's portrait, his plane, and other images. You can see pictures of Miss Fluellen, Mr. Purdy, and the exhibit on the CMF website. As museum visitors gathered for the opening reception on November 3, 2012, I joined Miss Fluellen in the vaulted entry hall, where we toured the exhibit and talked about Jesse Leroy Brown's life.
The story of Jesse Leroy Brown is that he was a young boy who grew up the son of a sharecropper and a school teacher. His father, John Brown, and his mother, Julie Brown, lived in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. As a young boy, Jesse went with his father to the movies to see the movie Hell's Angels and became very fascinated with flight, with the thought that one day I'll be that, a pilot. And he did very well in school, graduated the top of his class from Eureka High School in Mississippi, and went on to Ohio State University with the hopes of getting into their aeronautics program. But being the racial tensions of the time, he was dissuaded. And so he decided to join the NROTC.
And this exhibit that you have here,
these are some of the early recruiting materials that he would have seen during that time. And this is a picture of Jesse Brown as a graduate from Eureka High. And this is his wife and daughter, Daisy and Pamela.
We've stepped over to another exhibit. What are the items in this case?
This exhibit represents his squadron, Squadron 32, VF-32, and they flew the Corsair. And this is a model of the Corsair plane that he flew, and a picture of Jesse Brown aboard the Leyte, which was the ship that he sailed on. And here we have a pair of vintage goggles from the era. And this is a picture of his squadron. And on the very top row is Jesse Leroy Brown.
It's quite obvious in this picture that there are dozens of white faces, and his is the only black one.
He did break the color barrier as the first known African-American fighter pilot, but he was not the first African-American pilot, because prior to Jesse Brown, there had been a gentleman by the name of Oscar Holmes, who joined the Navy, became a pilot, and went up the ranks in the Navy. And then one day he was asked to fill out an application that asked race, and he checked that he was a Negro. And that was the beginning of the end of his advancement in the Navy.
So he was an African-American,
yes,
in the Navy, but they didn't know.
They did not know.
And as soon as they found out, that was the end of his career.
That was, yes.
Whereas in the case of Jesse Leroy Brown, he was accepted into his squadron.
Yes. The squadron, of course, were a band of brothers. They loved him. He was another squadron member. It was the rest of the Navy. Truman had passed the Executive Order 9981 that allowed integration of the Navy in 1948. The acceptance of blacks began then with some resistance. You know, there were those who resented the fact that he was there, period, and that he was a fighter pilot, which was very unusual. When he went to get on the bus from Pensacola with the rest of the fighter pilots, the bus driver said, "Excuse me, young man, this bus is for the pilots in training," assuming that he was not to be on it. And he said, "I know that," and stepped aboard. But he was determined. He loved what he wanted to do. And there were heroes in his life. And these are the men and women who ignored the racial tensions of the day, and they helped to move him through. So he could not have done it without fine people like his roommate, Bill Koenig, and like the first pilot who trained him, Roland Christensen.
If we step over to the other exhibit, what are some of the items here?
Okay, well, here we get to see some of those important men that I was mentioning to you in Jesse's life. William Koenig was his roommate and his first wingman. He contributed the two flight books from the Leyte that are here as a part of the exhibit. And then on the lower case, we have a picture of his wife at another very important moment after his death when he was recognized by the Navy. They named a ship after him, the USS Jesse Leroy Brown. And here's a picture of the ship itself.
Ms. Flewellen, what caused Jesse to be worthy of having a name placed on a Navy ship? What did he do?
On December the 4th, when Squadron VF-32 was supporting the Marines on the ground in Korea at the 38th parallel, and Jesse's plane began to lose fuel.
The war was on, and communist troops were in the area.
Yes, and a stray bullet hit his plane, and he went down. And when his plane hit the ground, they thought that was the end of Jesse. But as the rest of the crew looked down, they saw him waving, "Hey, I'm okay." At that moment, the gentleman who was his wingman that particular day, Thomas J. Huttner, decided that he would disobey orders and attempt to rescue Jesse. We had very few planes, so they had been given orders, if a man goes down, we have to sacrifice him because we have very few planes and we need them.
So the planes were in some respects more valuable than the pilots.
Exactly. The planes were very, very valuable. But to Thomas Huttner, at that moment, Jesse became more valuable, and he made the decision to intentionally crash his plane in an effort to rescue Jesse Brown. So as the others called for a rescue helicopter, he intentionally crashed his plane not far from where Jesse had crashed and went over to him. And when he got there, he found that Jesse's leg was caught in the fuselage. He tried as best he could to get him loose, but they were unsuccessful. And as he was attempting to do that, he was fighting the cold weather and the conditions that existed, as well as Jesse's going in and out of consciousness. And when the two of them realized that this was a fruitless effort, Jesse, in his last moment of consciousness, said to Tom, "Tell Daisy I love her." The helicopter came, and they tried again and realized that it was getting dark and it was in their best interest to get out. 2 days later, the Navy had a Vulcan funeral for him. They took planes over his body and the wreckage, and they napalmed it so that none of the things would be available for the enemy, the equipment and his body, and he was napalmed.
And all this is taking place behind enemy lines, too.
Yes,
so everyone that's coming to the rescue, particularly Huttner crashing his own airplane,
is risking his life, yes. And he was certain he would be court-martialed. But instead, the president at the time, Harry Truman, gave him the first Medal of Honor that was given in the Korean War.
Amazing. And I think that perhaps, as I'm looking at the picture of Lieutenant Huttner, Jesse Leroy Brown was the first black naval aviator, but Thomas Huttner, who tried to save him, was white.
If you looked at his background, you would think him least likely to rescue Jesse Brown. He had gone to Annapolis, and the history of Annapolis had been, up until that time, 8 black men had tried to go through Annapolis and had a horrific time. Many of them were harassed and just could not take it.
There was an atmosphere at the Academy of racism.
There was a definite attitude of racism, so he had come out of that. But there was something inside of him that belied all of that. And in that moment, when it was necessary to show himself to be the man that he was, a man of honor, and a man who loved his brother man, he took that risk of his life and showed himself to be the hero that he is. And then on May the 1st, 2010, I invited Thomas Huttner to come to Sanford, and I asked the question, Tom, where did your squadron go after you left Korea? And he answered, well, we went to a little town down in Florida called Sanford. And he was given the key to the city in Veterans Park. And as we walked in Veterans Park, we realized that it was May the 1st, exactly to the date that his squadron came here. So it's really wonderful. But it was in 1942 that the NAS Sanford originally opened. It was being reactivated when Tom came back during the Korean War. And they learned how to do night flying here, as many citizens of Sanford probably remember the nights when the planes were going overhead.
Sanford and the Naval Station and Jesse Brown and his squadron are all tied together.
Are all tied together, and rightfully so. The idea for honoring Jesse Brown actually took place when two gentlemen were sitting on the church bench. They were two deacons. One of them was Dr. Alzo Reddick, and the other one was Troy Demps. And Troy Demps mentioned that he had been the steward for the first African-American fighter pilot. Troy Demps, pictured here, talked about how proud they were of Jesse. And he said, we would not let a piece of lint get on his uniforms because he represented what, in a fair world, we might have been able to accomplish. So Dr. Reddick thought the story important enough that he commissioned money from the University of Central Florida to get a documentary made. And when that documentary was done, I got a call from Professor Anthony Major of the Zora Neale Hurston Institute of Documentary Film asking if I would do an exhibit to accompany that documentary. So that is really how the exhibit began.
I noticed that amongst the exhibits, you have some pictures, some drawings that are quite beautiful. Pictures of Jesse Leroy Brown, of his airplane, mm-hmm. of Daisy on the day of the Medal of Honor being awarded to Mr. Huttner. Mm-hmm. Who did these paintings?
These paintings are a very important part of the exhibit because when I began to put together the story of Jesse Leroy Brown, I realized that there wasn't a lot of artifacts. And so I asked an artist who was the son of a Navy veteran. His father was a gunner in the Navy during World War II. So I asked him, would he render a portrait of Jesse Brown? And he did the plane that Jesse flew in and Huttner's plane.
Ms. Flewellen, how did you decide to give the exhibit the title, A Pilot Lights the Way?
It so happens a few years before this, I had been asked to write a poem for black pilots. And I wrote a poem called Pioneers in the Sky. Pioneers in a turbulent sky they flew, weathering storms of injustice, clouds of prejudice, fogs of inequality, winds of change they flew, gallant beacons of light, who entered the cockpit with authority and took flight, opening doors that others might, they flew. With love and appreciation, we salute you, black pilots, pioneers of aviation. With confidence and reverence, you would always pray, knowing God, the pilot, lights the way.
Ensign Jesse Brown's death in the sub-freezing cold of that mountain in Korea was recognized by a posthumous award of the Navy's Distinguished Flying Cross. Lieutenant Thomas Huttner, who crash-landed his plane behind enemy lines in an attempt to save his friend and fellow pilot, earned the first Congressional Medal of Honor awarded in the Korean War. You may visit the exhibit and learn more at the Sanford Museum. It is operated by the city and is open Tuesday through Friday, 11 to 4, and Saturday, 1 to 4. Admission is free. We've posted pictures of Valeda Flewellen, Carl Raphael Purdy, and the exhibit on the CMF webpage. We have also provided links to other websites related to this feature, as well as to other CMF audio podcasts on similar topics. We've also included links to other websites offering more information related to this feature. Should you wish to comment on this podcast, we have provided an online process for you to offer your reaction to this feature. And you might also wish to email a link to this feature to someone who might value hearing it. If you wish to contact CMF Media, click on the Contact tab and send us an email. While at the website, we encourage you to visit our archive section for more stories about the people, politics, and history of our community. And while you're there, consider subscribing to the program content using the RSS feature we provide for your feed reader, or subscribe using iTunes. Once subscribed, you will be alerted immediately to each new feature we produce and post. You may prefer to subscribe to CMF's free e-letter, so we may keep you up to date on new programs as they are posted, or stay in touch by following CMF on Twitter and Facebook. CMF Public Media is a nonprofit, publicly supported charity. Information about CMF is available on the homepage of the website. For CMF Public Media, this is Desta Horner.
Support for CMF Public Media is made possible in part by the Friends of Carol McKinney, who encourage you to make a tax-deductible gift in support of the programming activities of Carol McKinney Foundation for Public Media.
You may give online at cmfmedia.org, where you may also see a complete list of those friends in the donor section of the website.
This podcast is a presentation of Carol McKinney Foundation for Public Media, Incorporated.
Visit cmfmedia.org for more information.
This is Judith Dolores Smith for CMF Public Media.
And this is Michael Hominick.